Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Fan Experience TV. For those of you joining us for the first time, my name is Mike Kados. Alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. Rick, I guess you want to get something off your chest.
Oh, yeah, baby. We're going to the playoffs, clinched the winning record for the first time in 8 years. The Knicks are back. Good evening there, Michael. How are you?
I am doing well. Obviously, it was a great weekend. Great. I had some Greek Easter festivities,
which yes.
you were in attendance for and yes. Experienced your first Greek Easter. So tell our viewers,
Greek Easter is very great. Very family oriented. A lot of kids running around. Saw about four dogs, Freckles and Brian. And what was the big one? What was the name of the big one?
I can't remember. Frankie,
yeah. And then the one that wanted to eat my fingers, Stewie. God bless Stewie. We love Stewie. But it was a great time. Your dad was cooking up a big lamb. Friends and family were there. Our good friend Alex was there, along with the kids and Chad. And I think those are your brothers over there, your sister over there?
Yeah. Well, yeah. My sister showed up for, for a second.
And your uncle, Babu, was there. And it was a great time, and
it was great food, great times.
Great food, great times.
The kids had a blast. The adults had a blast. We all ate well. No meat, just lamb.
Great lamb.
And it was good times. We got into what your stage name is, and you said you wanted to mention
My stage name became a debate, and it was quashed real quick when somebody said his name is Rich, and that's it. And I was like, all right, done. So we'll go with that. But aside from all that, it was a great weekend in sports. We had the NFL draft, and I think we'll kick it off there with our beloved Jets, who I believe had a successful draft, drafting Zach Wilson in the second round. I mean, the second pick overall in the draft. Pick.
Yeah.
They move up 9 spots to get a Vera Tucker. They solidify the left side of the offensive line. And then in round 2, they take Elijah Moore, who I think is like – I think Tyreek Hill, man. I think Tyreek Hill, I think explosive offense, and the Jets are doing the right thing. They're building around Zach. They're protecting him, and they're making sure that he has weapons to throw the ball to. So I think overall great. I think the surprise move in the draft was the Bears moving up to 11 to take Justin Fields. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I think the Bears had to redeem themselves from Mitchell Trubisky and that disaster. And so Matt Nagy and them decided, you know what, we're going to move up. They gave up a boatload, but they got up there and took Justin Fields. And it's for the Giants and Kadarius Toney. Listen, man, playmakers all over that offense. If the Giants don't make the playoffs next year with the offense that they have, then Daniel Jones has got to go. Joe Judge has got to find a new quarterback and move on, because the guy's got just weapons all over the place.
Yeah, well, actually, happy Star Wars Day to everybody out there.
Oh, happy May
4th. And the Giants are posting up pictures of Daniel Jones in Mandalorian gear and calling him the Daniel-Lorian. So, whatever. I'm pretty sure the Mandalorian ain't going to trip over his own feet.
Yeah.
On his way to
the draft. What'd you think of the draft and what our teams did here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously happy with what the Jets did. Giants made some nice moves. I think a lot of teams definitely filled some holes. Jacksonville had a very interesting draft, and that number one pick, sometimes they get tricky. Like, they get that one pick and then everything else goes to shit. They kept the quarterback and the running back together, which is nice to see. At least they get a little bit of a rapport there.
But Jacksonville has another running back there, no? Don't they have?
Yeah.
Robinson, you know?
Yep. And Belichick is trying to fill some shoes over there in New England, picking up Mac Jones and his ex-defensive coordinator, Nick Saban, obviously trusts how he evaluates players and gets them set up for NFL. So let's see what happens with Mac Jones. But yeah, I mean, Andy Dalton was brought into the Bears, told he was going to be the starter, and then the Bears go and trade up and draft their quarterback of the future. So it's going to be a battle between Dalton and Fields, and then Nick Foles is really expendable at that point. And there's talk that, you know, he might end up with the backup job over here in the Meadowlands for the New York Jets. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, everybody out there knows that there was some drama draft day. The whole day, Aaron Rodgers saying, I want out. And he made the day pretty much all about him. And We'll see how it plays out. Now all of a sudden he wants to go to the Raiders. He's intrigued by the Raiders now. The Niners had a deal on the table and the Packers didn't want to take it. I don't know. It's all a bunch of BS.
Here's the thing with Aaron Rodgers. You were at the NFC, you went to the NFC Championship last year and you couldn't put the ball in the end zone. You couldn't score. You got to the playoffs. He has all pros all over that team, man. Davante Adams, Aaron Jones. I mean, he's got he has an offensive line that keeps him standing. I mean, he's got the defense is the issue, but he has all pros all over the field. And he's complaining that they cut some wide receiver that nobody's ever heard about. He's upset because of the Jordan Love. This is what it's about. He's upset about that they drafted Jordan Love, right? And he's upset about that. And he's throwing a tantrum. And he wants more money. And he's trying to get his way out. And I'm like, look, man, I get it that you can complain, right? Because, look, you've won one Super Bowl. You're one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league. But Jesus Christ, man, your team is loaded. Stop complaining. Go out and win. Enough is enough. And so, listen, at the end of the day, I think Green Bay is going to be forced to trade him. They're going to have no choice. And the question
or he's going to retire.
Yeah, he's going to retire. What's he going to do for 2 years? Play Jeopardy? I mean, come on, host Jeopardy. Is he really going to give up a couple of more prime years in the league to host Jeopardy? I don't think he wants to do that. I think he wants out. And I think he wants to go somewhere warmer, obviously, because he's a California guy. But, like, the question is, and I heard this on Colin Cowherd's show today, he was saying, and he's true, the question is, can Justin Love play? Like, if he can play, then you can make the trade. If he can't play, then keep for another year and see what happens. But enough already. This is way too much drama, man.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. Like, Jordan Love is not going to fill the shoes of Aaron Rodgers, like, right off the bat.
No,
like that. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is he's a generational talent on that. I mean, not many quarterbacks of that caliber just come out of thin air.
No.
And they also said that not one quarterback for the Packers has ever played more than 16 seasons. And it was Bart Starr, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers. They've all played 16 seasons. And now this one could be the one that puts him over the top, or is he retiring? I mean, how much drama is just going on with this quarterback stuff? Not even Rodgers. Like, you got the Russell Wilson drama. Now they're working it out. They obviously, you had the Watson drama, and that took a turn.
That's a whole legal thing.
But yeah, I know. But before all that, there was still so much drama.
Right.
You know,
Brady,
I mean,
last year
the Carson Wentz stuff, Brady, and Brady's also saying that Julian Edelman ain't gonna retire. He's just coming. He just didn't want to tell Belichick that. I like Tom Brady on the Bucs, man. He's just like this free spirit.
Yeah, he's open, man. He's like –
he's just this free spirit. But, yeah, no, it was a good draft. I'm excited for what this year is going to bring. Obviously, we got the extra games, and everything is being shaken up. But we could talk a little bit more about the NFL and everything after our next guest, and we'll talk about how these new prospects are going to play into the field in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of prospects, now we are joined by Long Island, New York comedian, and he was the host of Prospects on SNY. Please help us welcome Alex Aronson to the program.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for
having me. What's up, Alex? How are you, man?
How are we doing?
Doing well. Good to see you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Great to have you on. Thanks for coming. So, yeah, I mean, we pretty much start every conversation the same way. So I know you were born and raised in Long Island, but where did you develop that love for sports? Who were your go-to teams at the beginning? And were there any, like, moments or fan experiences that really hooked you in on a certain team?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, baseball, I think, was the first sport I gravitated to. And I'm sure as a very young kid, probably before I really remember, my dad was taking me to games. He grew up a Met fan. But then I started playing Little League, and I think that got me even more hooked on it. So I think baseball was probably the first sport, and it got hooked on the Mets specifically. Then I got into hockey, too. I remember going to a lot of Islander games. It was super easy. My dad was an Islander fan in the 80s, but, like, I grew up on Long Island. It's a 15-minute drive to the Coliseum. It's a hockey game. You're in and out in 2.5 hours. It's a dad's like dream. And tickets were free, if not maybe a few dollars, to go to an Islander game in the 90s. So definitely going to a lot of games got me into it. And then it's just stuck with me. I mean, I still am a diehard Met Islanders fan. It's still definitely a bond I have with my dad. I don't play the sports anymore, which is a bummer. You asked, like, maybe an experience that got me really into it. I went to spring training all the time. when I was younger in Port St. Lucie. And Edgardo Alfonso was like my favorite player at the time.
He's my favorite Met of all time.
I loved him. I think my first like screen name was an Edgardo Alfonso like shout out somewhere in there. It was like Edgardo fan or something. And I was trying to get his autograph. He was in the dugout area, but it was like a fence and everyone was trying to get in there. And I like got really pushed up against the fence. And then he like said, hey, like lead off the little buddy. He called me like his little buddy or whatever. And I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. And I got his autograph and I walked away feeling like Edgardo Alfonso now knows who I am. And yeah, I think it's those things like that. And just going to games and playing the sport as a kid are really what got me into it. And still to this day.
Yeah, I mean, it's something else when you're at the games and you go to them constantly and you just soak in that atmosphere. And then, like you said, the bonds that you form with your father or with your friends or whoever. And it's just intoxicating. And obviously, a lot of us missed that in the last. Have you been to a game yet this season?
I mean, typical Mets fashion, the game I bought tickets to got rained out. So I ended up sitting home and watching myself on TV instead. No, they've been playing that show a lot with all these rain delays. There's another one today. They got postponed again tonight. So
they have been playing it on SNY. They've been playing the recaps?
They've been playing the show. I mean, so we filmed that show in season, like the 2018 season.
Yeah.
We had high hopes that it would come back for another season. I certainly had a lot of fun filming it, regardless of some Met fans loved it. I'm sure some fans love shitting on it, which I always get a kick out of that. So yeah, they still play it. They play it all the time, for better or worse. Like, it's good to get my face out there, but yeah, still on TV.
Yeah, well, obviously, growing up, obviously a Mets fan, an Islanders fan, there was some abysmal years in the recent memory. So you got to be funny. You got to learn how to laugh. So, like, where did this route going towards comedy start for you?
Yeah, I don't know if I ever made that correlation between, like, disappointment as a sports fan and then wanting to be a comedian, but there's probably something there. I mean,
well, you have to be thick-skinned, and you have to be, obviously, as a stand-up comedian, you're going to get those boo birds. You
100%.
Know? And you have to be able to take it, and you've experienced all that disappointment from the Mets and the Islanders.
Yeah,
I mean, same as me, so...
Right, you get it. I'm used to more dishing out the boo birds than getting it. So that was a change. But yeah, I think the Mets and the Islanders force you to have thick skin. And yeah, it's definitely important as a comedian. You're going to deal with a lot of failure and it's tough. And you got to have a short memory and just kind of realize that in the end, you still love the Mets even though they blew it. And you still love to do stand up even though you sucked that night. So yeah, I'm sure there's a correlation there in trying to make me a tougher guy or a tougher skin, look at things a little differently, have like not take yourself too seriously, and then also appreciate the moments when they're good. Because like you said, the Islanders have been on a bit of a run the last few years, so I'm probably getting a little spoiled with all this playoffs that I haven't been used to for a very long time. So, but yeah, I'm sure there's some correlation there between being the fan of miserable franchises and having a good sense of humor.
Yeah, it's just thick-skinned, and you got Rick over there. He's glowing because of his Knicks.
I got my Knicks.
All those abysmal seasons, and now he's reveling in this year.
Yeah, but Alex, I want to ask you. So for somebody who's in stand-up comedy, what's it? Some people think, oh, I can do that. I can stand up there and do comedy. But tell us, what's it like when you first get up there on a stage for the first time, and you got a bit, and you get out there, and all of a sudden it's like the lights are on. Tell us what that experience is like.
Yeah, it's I guess the first show I did, I had like been taking like a class thing. So I've been preparing my like 5 minutes that I was going to do. Yeah. And then once you get like that first laugh, it's pretty like intoxicating and it definitely sucks you in. But certainly like people, I think a lot of people think they're funny and there's like, oh, I could do that. Certainly getting on stage and doing it is a very different thing. But I mean, it was such a shock because like the first show that you do, you get brought up as this guy is a stand-up comedian. The host brings over, this guy's a very funny comedian. And he hits you like, I'm a comedian. I'm just doing one show and I'm a comedian. So it's like, so they bring you up as a comedian. It's like, you better be funny. You told everyone you're a comedian. So the first few times are definitely, it's kind of like your adrenaline's so high that you don't even know what happened when you first start out. You're just so nervous. And at least I was, and worried that like, you kind of don't remember what happened. But then as you go on, you get used to it and then you start to have more fun with it, even if it doesn't go well. But yeah, certainly people say they can do it. It depends what you're trying to do. I mean, I'm trying to make a career out of this. This is what I want to not have to work a day job and be able to make money off of doing comedy. So like, if that's your goal, you really have to immerse yourself in it. It's a 6-7 night a week thing. You're getting up 10-12 nights a week writing. You really sacrifice a lot to even have the opportunity to get even close to good enough to be able to maybe make it someday. So I think people probably don't realize what a big sacrifice it is. Doesn't mean they're not funny, but you have to really love it if you really want to go for it.
And when you got on stage that first time and you got that laugh, did you know right then and there, this is what I want to do for a career? This is the path that I want to take.
It's fun. I think I had decided even before I like started doing stand-up that like this is what I was going to do. I was super unhappy in my career. I was working in advertising for a few years and I just, I hated it. I was in a rut. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I always loved stand up and always like loved making people laugh, not taking yourself too seriously, going back to the Mets thing. You're like, oh, we're a joke. This is hilarious. We suck. This is funny. Oh, even though it's not. So yeah. Sorry. I forget what the actual question was. I'm so used to shit.
No, I'm saying when
did you come up with the, the idea that you wanted to do this.
I
was unhappy with my job. And I read this book called Sick in the Head that Judd Apatow came out with that interviews all like the big comics of the last like couple decades. Mm-hmm. And just like everything they were saying about the way they see the world and what their values were and what they cared about. It was like, this is the way I feel about things. And like, it was kind of an oh shit moment. I think I was in Florida with my parents at the time as I was like making this decision. And I got like drunk one night and just was like, mom and dad, I'm funny. I'm doing comedy. And they were like, they were patting me on the back. It's going to be your hobby. That's cute. And I don't think they really knew I meant it like seriously. And then I got sucked into it and I was doing it for a couple of years and then prospects happened. And that's when I was like, you know what? This happened really quick. I mean, to get something on TV, like only a few years into comedy, just like doesn't happen. And it felt like a fluke and imposter syndrome and all that. But once that happened, I was like, I went from full time to working part time. I was like, I'm going for it. I'm not going to wait any longer.
Yeah. So that is amazing. And like you said, you have to give up a lot. But with anything that you decide to do, like you have to be consistent. You just have to keep doing it day in and day out and can't just expect it all to just click right away. You have to work hard for whatever it is you want to do. And in your case, it's writing jokes. I went to your website, aaronsoncomedy.com. Everybody out there, you can find a couple of clips from him. He had a stand-up from Gotham Comedy Club and a couple of reels from the show Prospects, which we'll get into in a second. But yeah, you just have to stay consistent. And that's really the key to anything. So tell us, I guess you mentioned Judd Apatow. So let me touch on that really quick. Who were your main inspirations? Obviously, Judd Apatow is big in the game. And is connected to a lot of people that are big in comedy. Who were your, main go-to? I guess like your top three, let's say.
Yeah, top three stand-ups. Since this is not a popular answer anymore, but I'm never taking it back. Louis C.K., in my opinion, is still the funniest of all time. Put aside what he did, separate.
Yeah,
the genius. We all still listen to Michael Jackson. So Louis C.K. number one, and it's like it's not super close, really, in my book. No one really made me laugh like him. I'll say Dave Chappelle, growing up on just like Chappelle's Show and watching his stand-up, I loved. And then as I got a little older, really not stand-up, but Jon Stewart, I was a big Daily Show guy and loved that he was a big Mets fan. I think he's a Long Island guy, Jew. I just felt very So, yeah, I felt like I went to see a live taping of the Daily Show, and I was just a big fan of his. I think he did stand up for a bit. I don't really know much of it, but just comedically, definitely one of my influences. Mm-hmm. I'll throw in like a name of a newer guy, or that Mark Norman to me is one of like the funniest guys working in New York City right now, and he's making a name for himself. So, definitely one of the guys who I admire.
Awesome, awesome. And yeah, Louis C.K. is funny, and it's about what he does on the stage. Not what he does off the stage. Obviously, that was a bummer to hear that stuff. But so let's talk about prospects for a second. So where did it come from? Yeah. Where did you get this opportunity? Was it through a stand-up gig, somebody seeing you perform? Was it through a friend? Tell us how that gig came about for you.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I guess it was in like 2017. A guy that I work with had this production company that he was doing like on the side. That was trying to sell this dating show to SNY, and they wanted to film a pilot for the show. So I went, they got me on the pilot. They were just looking for a Met fan that could be funny, and he knew I was doing stand-up, and that was a Met fan. I was like, yeah, I could do that. So I went on the pilot version of the show as a contestant. And I was there like intentionally to try and make people laugh and like crack jokes and like mess with the other contestants and like try and win the day because I wanted to look like the man and all that. But I was like there to be funny and be kind of a personality. And then I didn't get the date. I lost. And I just left like totally embarrassed and like pretty down on myself, just feeling like dating is hard enough, but doing it on camera is hard. So I left like pretty disappointed. I think they sent me the cut of the episode like a few months later. I didn't even watch it. Like I didn't even want to see what I looked like. And then like a year later, they sold the show and they wanted to add a host and they were through my name in the bucket amongst with some other people who they couldn't get. And then, yeah, like the director and the producer of the show came out to one of my sets, just like see me perform. And then from there, I put like a man on the street reel together for them and shot some stuff and then eventually got it. And it was pretty crazy. It really kind of, like I said, like I had not even thought about it for over a year since I'd filmed it. And then all of a sudden it becomes, I'm the host of the show. So it was pretty wild.
And what was it like to be interacting with like players and like the executives there as you're doing this show? I mean, did you try to get any of the players to date? Did you try to like get any stuff like that? Did you think of stuff outside of the box?
I mean, we were obviously like pushing to do all kinds of stuff. I mean, I love Gary, Keith, and Ron, especially. I'm a huge Keith Hernandez fan. So like, I was always pitching them commercial ideas. I like, involved those guys, but it was obviously like hard to get them in on it. Although we were able to like shoot some stuff in the booth, which was cool. But yeah, like one of the, like besides like shooting a TV show and like being able to get paid to be funny and all that was cool. But honestly, like as a childhood, thinking of a child to have the amount of access I had to Citi Field and the team was just like wild. That was everything I could have ever dreamed of as a kid. I mean, we had like a dressing room downstairs, like right next to the locker room. So like I had the credentials. If I wanted to, I could have walked into the locker room, but I would have never been allowed back and that show would have been canceled or I would have been on it. So I never did that. But to have that level of access was crazy. I mean, I remember the conference room, the press room is like right next to where we were. And we were filming the day Harvey got released. And like, the media attention was like crazy. And I'm like literally outside the room while Mickey Callaway is like doing the press conference talking about it. So like being that ingrained in the team and like walking out of the tunnel with like Mr. Met and all this like backstage stuff, going on the field during batting practice. Like it was living a childhood dream. And it was almost like the TV show was just sort of the cherry on top of the whole thing.
And how do they find the contestants? Is it just random people that applied for it? Did you like pick people out of the stands? I mean, how did that work?
Yeah, there was casting calls and people sent in like audition tapes. I got a couple of my friends on it and they made fools of themselves. So I have like, I have blackmail on them for the rest of their lives. So yeah, we got a couple of buddies on.
Nice.
Was the rapper, non-rapper, what are your buddies? The guy that said he rapped, and I like how you just walked over in one of the clips because, you know, I was trying to find like full episodes. I couldn't find any full episodes, but I saw some of the clips. And you're just walking over it, just grabbing the slider right off the plate and taking away with you.
That was off script.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I know. You could tell. It's like you just were winging it, and it was really fun. And I look forward to obviously watching some of these recaps. I didn't realize that the recaps are out there, so I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for those for sure. But it's funny because I found out about the show. We had a couple of interns working for us, and this show is part of Playing the Field. And the Playing the Field brand is we're building a dating app that's mainly for sports fans. It's exclusively for sports fans. So he came up with, he was a Mets fan and he watched the show because he saw it on SNY a couple of years ago. And I'm like, how come I never knew about this? So, and I was like, and I found you on Instagram and I'm like, hey, come on the show. But it's just so funny because that's exactly what I would like to do at some point is have people be dating right at the ballpark and obviously have those opportunities to come up with some partnership teams and stuff. But it's really cool that you like this guy just made this show and pitched it to the Mets and they bought it. And I saw some of those clips where you're sitting there in the booth and giving the recap. So that must've been absolutely surreal. And is there any news on, because obviously that was right before COVID, maybe a couple of years ago, but is there any news on, you know, them rebooting it at all? Have you heard anything?
Not that I know of. I mean, I still have contact with someone who formerly used to work at SNY. I don't see it coming back. I've been trying to get some people to tweet at Steve Cohen. I know he's very active. You know, so I just want maybe his wife like actually loves the show. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so I don't think it's coming back.
Now, does Steve Cohen own SNY or the Wilpons still do?
I think the Wilpons still do, but they're looking to sell. I don't know why Steve wouldn't just like want control of the whole thing.
I think he did, and I don't want to sell it. Wanted to sell it to him.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Well, the Wilpons can't do anything. Right? They couldn't even get their dating shows right.
Well, they got their host right.
Yeah. Well, the funniest part about the whole thing is I love Met fans, and I almost got where they were coming from. Like, why is this why I have a dating show? I was like, yeah, I don't know, but I'm gonna fucking have fun with it. So shut the fuck up. But I don't know if we can curse on.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, of course.
Fuck it.
Perfect. Yeah, all right, great. So I dropped my first F bomb.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mets fans were complaining. They're like, we have a dating show, but we don't have a center fielder. I'm like, who do you think is how much money do you think we're making? Like, you think I'm making whoever they were trying to sign a few years ago, AJ Pollock money or whatever who it was that wanted to get.
So
you can play center, right?
Yeah. So obviously COVID's affected a lot of everybody's lives, obviously disrupted everything. How have you been able to sort of keep your act going and like stay sharp and like throughout all this, just, you know, this whole deal that we've been through?
Yeah. I mean, comics have had to get creative. I think I was kind of fortunate in the sense that I still have a part-time day job that I did not lose. And that wasn't almost fortunate to have not gotten to a point yet where I was relying on stand up for my income, because I know comics that had a really tough time and it was rough. So I probably lost like 4 or 5 months, maybe a little more, of just like not performing at all, or at least not consistently. Mm-hmm. And then I escaped to Florida in March. Yeah, I'm not a true New Yorker. I didn't stick it out. I've been through enough torture. I didn't need to be in New York for all this. So yeah, I went down to Florida for a few months. It was probably a total of like 4 or 5 months of not performing regularly. And then in like late summer, early fall, I got back to New York City, started doing like park shows. There was a lot of that going on, Central Park and stuff like that. It was great just to like be up performing again, but it's obviously not the same. You need the low ceiling and the indoor laughs for it to really be the same. But then people got creative. They did private shows and like rooftops, backyards. I've been doing shows on like the patio of a bar in Midtown. So the last couple months, it felt more normal where I'm getting up 8 to 10 times a week again, which is great. It feels like pre-COVID life again. But it was definitely tough for a time, and I don't even think I'm still back performance-wise to where I was before COVID. It's hard to get back there.
Yeah, I was on your website and I saw when you put went out of date last night. It felt great to get back to credit card debt.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
I think that's great. That's classic. So you got a couple of shows coming up. Tell our viewers if they want to go see your shows, like what. You got a show on the 27th and the 28th.
I
mean,
I'm glad we're talking about the website, because I literally just like after COVID went back in and was like, I got to like my show from June 2020 was still up there. But yeah, I think this is live. I'll be at the Three Monkeys in Midtown tomorrow for their 8 o'clock show, and at Broadway Comedy Club as well tomorrow. And then this weekend, Mother's Day, I may actually be back in Long Island spending some time with the mom. But I'll head to the website and I'll keep it up to date.
Yeah, and definitely let us know, and you know, we can share it on our stories or whatnot too. So, are you living in the city right now?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn. I'm in Williamsburg now.
Okay, nice. So obviously, you were talking about getting creative, and not much unlike us, we started a show, a podcast, TV show, whatever we want to call it. And you started your own podcast around, what was it, May, April of last year, called All Days Off Podcast. And it's you and a buddy of yours. So tell us a little bit about the show and where you came up with the concept and what it's about.
Yeah, for sure. We started it during COVID. It's me and another comic buddy of mine. And like you guys said, we had to get creative, but it was hard in the first few months when you literally didn't even know if you could go outside, what the hell was going to happen to you. So there was just no outlet to like be funny and do comedy besides people hopping on TikTok and trying to go viral on Twitter. So we thought of starting a podcast. We took a couple months to like think about what our like point of view was. We're both pretty similar guys. He's a couple years younger than me, grew up on Long Island, had a similar upbringing. And I think I think we're, you know, we're millennials, and there is a stigma against us that we're like very, very lazy. And basically our point of view is that's 100% true. And like, we kind of like defend ourselves and kind of, there's this whole hustle culture that it became real popular, I feel like, with millennials, and you know, everyone has to have a side hustle and whatever. And even though like me and him are both hustling, trying to be comedians, the people who have to consistently tell you about how hard they're hustling, that kind of like gets on our nerves. So we're kind of just like, don't take yourself too seriously. We're about being lazy and slacking off, and we just try to have a good time. And it's a pretty laid back conversation. We bring other comics on occasionally. We talk about what's going on in the news and try and give our sort of our point of view. So it started in the pandemic. Our first episode came out probably like end of May or in June sometime. And some breaks in between. I'm sure you guys know it's tough to stay on a consistent schedule at times. Yeah. But yeah, we're trying to release every week now. And yeah, it's all days off. Myself and my co-host Corey Oskowitz, another comedian in New York.
Yeah, no, it's a funny show. I listened to the most recent one that you posted. And it's funny. You guys got a great rapport, and you make people laugh. So that's what it's all about, especially in, you know, times like this with people not smiling about much anymore.
Everybody's all pissed off every day.
Yeah, but really, I was thinking about this. We're all just walking around like with the middle finger at each other. It's just like everybody is just like fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
It's how do you know people aren't walking around with rested bitch face on the whole day? You got a mask on. Nobody will know the difference at this point.
Well, I'm officially no more mask outdoors while I'm walking. Everyone's seeing my face now. I'll keep it on indoors. But yeah, I've been living the post-COVID life for a couple months now with like all the comedy and being indoors and stuff. Yeah. So I'm probably not the model. Fauci wouldn't be proud. I'm moving on, Dr. Fauci.
There you go.
Very nice.
No, that's incredible. I want to ask you, so where do you see, like, so you're doing stand-up. Are you trying to take your career in a sense where you might get, when I was growing up, I remember Def Comedy Jam and like, shows like that. Are you trying to get to that route where you're doing stand-up shows like that? Eventually, do you have, your own special? I mean, are you thinking of maybe just putting out your own kind of content as your career develops? Like, where do you want to trend towards?
Yeah, I mean, my whole... people come into this like with different goals. Mine, it was pretty basic. It was, I just want to make a living off of doing stand-up. And so like, obviously I have bigger goals than just being able to pay the bills by doing stand-up comedy. But like, yeah, I see myself going down sort of the, at least what I viewed as the traditional stand-up comic route, which is breaking into clubs, getting on late night, getting TV spots, and then who knows what happens from there. It's changed a lot though. I mean, social media has really flipped the script on how you can, that traditional model in stand-up is still there, but we would use the term gatekeepers a lot. They're not really there anymore. If you have a phone, you can put content out. So like, I'm someone who's focused more on getting good at stand-up. And I grew up, I loved watching stand-up comics do late night sets. It was like one of the reasons I loved to watch Letterman and Conan and shows like that. So like, that's definitely been a dream of mine when I started stand-up. And so I definitely see myself trying to follow that sort of kind of traditional stand-up route. But at the same time, there's so many, you're asking about like putting out my own content. So like, I think it started with the podcast, and I definitely see the value in being able to reach more people with putting out content on social media. But everything is a time suck, and it's an opportunity cost. That's like, do you want to devote your time to joke writing and getting on stage or making videos? And people, you got to find the time to do both, I guess, at some point. But I see myself trying to follow just being known as a stand-up first and then see what happens from there.
No, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember Def Charm Jam. I always remember watching Bernie Mac when he first came out. I don't know if you've seen that, but it is one of the most hilarious stand-ups I've ever seen. I mean, do you also like go back and look at like people like Bernie Mac, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor back in his days? Like, do you see the old school kind of comics? Robin Williams, how they did it back in the day?
Yeah, it's interesting. I like my love for comedy started with like the comics I was watching that were hot at the time when I was a kid, which was like Chappelle and Chris Rock. And then once I started doing comedy, I started having much less interest in watching comedy and watching other comics do it. So I've seen some old, like I've seen some like the Eddie Murphy stuff from the 80s. I've definitely seen some like Andy Kaufman and who else? Like some Jim Carrey stuff from, Jim Carrey from like the Comedy Store back in the day. Yeah. And it's definitely changed. Comedy's changed a lot in terms of what a perceived line you can or cannot cross, more people being more guarded about what they say. But I mean, the art form is still a person and a microphone, and that's it. So, I still, I don't like watch as much comedy as I used to, but I do like watching the old school stuff because it just seems so it's like so different than it is now, but it's still the same art.
Like I think about a Jerry Seinfeld performance today. I don't know if he performs much today. I think he does, but I think his stuff in the 90s was just like classic. I don't know if like today people would be like, well, you can't go near that. I mean, it's crazy, right?
He was a pretty uncontroversial dude too. So if someone has issue with like whatever his salt shaker, that's taking it over the top, I think.
Have you ever had the opportunity to open for somebody that you kind of looked up to in the game, in the comedy game, and any of your shows?
Not like officially like being the opener for somebody, which is them like saying, hey, take you on the road and or whatever.
Yeah.
Speaking of earlier, a few months ago, actually, Louis is still out doing stand-up, and he was on a show that I did. I didn't open for him, but I went up after him. So that's probably the closest.
Okay.
All right.
Did you guys meet?
He's keeping a low profile. You know, and he's Louis. It doesn't mean he's still a legend. And, like, I'm never really the guy, especially when I'm trying to be a comic, to go over and start just being fanboying him. But I got to follow him, which was sick. It was just cool to have a recording of like the host being like, and that was Louis C.K. and now here's the host of Prospects. So, but then I think he saw me come off. He was leaving. I gave him a fist bump. I said, it's great to see you out. And that was it. So there wasn't really much chatting, but it was cool just to be on the same stage as him, even though it took a lot of shitty things happening, including his personal life and COVID, for that to come to fruition. But it was still a really cool experience.
Well, I guess you got to find silver lining somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Are you popular enough to get past the waiting list of? You see the Adam Sandler stuff the other day?
I did see that. Yeah. I don't know if his mask was on or not. Maybe they just didn't recognize him. But I don't know. That was pretty funny. That hasn't happened to me. I don't really have any sway. I got recognized by the two most classic, just like Long Island things with prospects that have happened is a Long Island Railroad conductor recognized me. And a woman who like worked at a snacks, like one of the food stands at Nassau Coliseum recognized me.
Right.
But I asked her if the pretzel was free and she said no. So I guess I don't know if I need to stand that.
You got that.
You're not quite there yet. You're getting there.
Basically Billy Joel on Long Island, essentially. Yeah.
There you go.
So yeah, obviously you want to make a living doing this, but any interest in, obviously you were the host of Prospects. Would you be interested in hosting a show, something like that again, or just being on TV in any shape or form?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to turn down any opportunity to pay me if it involves being funny. Like, certainly. And I mean, you know, I said following the traditional stand-up route. I mean, like I said, that sort of exists, doesn't exist anymore, whatever. But like, I'm open to 100% doing a TV show again. It was a blast. It came so early on in comedy that I definitely felt in over my head at the beginning. But after a little while, I kind of felt like I was in my element. And from that moment on, that's when after like the first week of shooting, that's when I decided I was switching to part-time to my job. So I definitely loved it. And that's the great thing about stand-up comedy is you can lead to a bunch of different opportunities that include being on TV. And so, I'm 100% open to opportunities like that again.
Yeah, wow. I don't want to put you on the spot, but you got any like mini set that you want to throw out there?
That is the definition of putting me on the
spot. Yeah, literally.
You don't have to do it, though. You don't have to do it, though.
I'm going to instead plug the website again.
There you go.
There's a link there. AaronsonComedy.com. You can check out. There's like a 5-minute setup there.
No, that was hilarious. I thought the whole thing was funny.
I appreciate that. Yeah. It's from a couple of years ago. We still tell some of those jokes. But yeah, check that out. That'll be a better representation of my comedy than anything.
There we go. That's the proper route to take. Good job on that.
So for all our viewers, AaronsonComedy.com. And on the Instagram, it's All Days Off Pod. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the podcast is All Days Off Pod on Instagram, and we're on Twitter as well.
There you go. Well, Alex, thanks for coming on tonight, man. Best of luck to you. I think you're going to do great. When can we go see a comedy show, by the way? Like, you're on tomorrow night. Well, on your website, will you be posting it, like, every time you're on now?
Yeah, I'll start updating it more consistently. It's so funny. I like, literally just went to fix it, like, a couple days ago. But, I'll be tomorrow night at Three Monkeys in Midtown in New York City. You can just go on Eventbrite, look for the comedy show, and it'll be up there. It's at 8 o'clock. And then also tomorrow night at the 9 o'clock show at Broadway Comedy Club. So two chances tomorrow night. And then next week I'll have more dates up on my website.
All right, sounds good. I'll be checking. I got to go to a show. I work in Midtown, so I might be able to pop in and check a show.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. Let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah, Alex, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. And one of these days, let's try and catch a Mets game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hope it doesn't get rained out.
Or the dog's arm doesn't fall off. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast. And
thank you. Absolutely.
And you're always welcome on the show anytime.
Absolutely.
Take it easy.
All right. Alex Aronson, everybody. Go check him out.
Three Monkeys tomorrow night and Broadway Comedy Club tomorrow night. So
that is so the truth. COVID is over. Go on a date and you're incredible.
Yeah, no, his Twitter is it's pretty on point. A couple of little one-liners that he's got in there. So yeah, it's a good viewing if you want to do it. Yeah. But yeah, definitely go to his website because there's a nice little skit from his time, one of his sets at Gotham Comedy Club in the city. I thought it was pretty freaking hilarious. I'm not gonna lie. But obviously we talked about stand-up comedy and there being laughs and there being boos sometimes for people.
Yeah.
And the boos are prevalent in the New York City area today, tomorrow, and the next day because the Houston Astros are in New York in the Bronx facing the Yankees for the first time since all of the cheating scandal broke.
Oh, yeah.
And fans in attendance for the first time. They couldn't even play the Astros last year because of the COVID, only playing against the East.
Right.
So Bluebirds were in full effect, even if it's only 8,000 people, 10,000 people, whatever the case is. But they are letting them have it. I got the "you're a cheater" during batting practice. There's Bluebirds swinging left and right over there. So the New York fans have an opportunity to let their voices be heard. And let's be real, New York, New Yorkers, they have a loud voice.
They are very opinionated. I'm surprised somebody didn't show up with like a buzzer or like a
somebody was dressed up like Oscar the Grouch in a garbage can, and he was banging it. I saw a video being posted. He was outside the stadium, so I can't tell you if he got in. But it was trending on Twitter.
I'm sure people were trying to get in there with trash cans and like buzzers and like "you guys cheat." I mean, the chaos over there must be insane. And it's only like what, 8,000-9,000 people in there?
Yep. Yeah. But I think they have a little bit more room than City Field, or is it the other way around?
I think one of them's
got like 10, one of them's got like 8, I think.
All right. But to me, City Field just looks bigger. I mean, you go to City Field and it's just like immense. And, of course, your beloved Mets get rained out tonight. Jacob DeGrom's lat is inflamed. I mean, the Mets, they fired Chili Davis in, like, the most awkward of ways. I mean, the Mets, man, what's going on over there, Mike? I mean, talk to us, man. Give us the 411. I mean, what's going on?
I mean, wish I could tell you, but, yeah, Jacob DeGrom was scratched today. They say it's not anything serious. I'm missing one start. But yeah, like you said, rained out today. Yeah. Not uncommon at this point in time.
Yeah, pretty much.
And yeah, they're playing the Cardinals, I believe, a doubleheader tomorrow. And then they have a game on Thursday as well. It's a 4-game set. I mean, just got to hope for the best for DeGrom. And there's nothing else you could do but just wait and see. And, yeah, the Chili Davis thing, obviously, they're going more on the analytical side of things and not really the pure hitting side of things, which you would think for hitting, you kind of want to learn how to hit, right?
Yeah.
But well, I think apparently analytics are better than pure hitting, approach, and all these different things. It's questionable at best.
Yes.
The decision to let go of Chili Davis, but what are you going to do? It's the Mets.
Yeah. So we were discussing this, obviously, before Alex came on, but we were talking about the NFL draft, and then you and I were talking, I think, before the year about who the rookie of the year is. So, or who the rookie of the year might be. So I will let you lead off and see who do you think will be the 2021-2022 NFL Rookie of the Year.
You have to put the money on a quarterback. I would have to assume.
That's bold.
You have to put your money. The smart money is on a quarterback.
So you're saying Trevor Lawrence.
It's not going to be Zach Wilson. I'll tell you that. It could be Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. It could be Justin Fields because they have a nice group. I mean, the Bears did go to the playoffs last year. So they have a team around him. They're not in a complete rebuild like the Jaguars are. Like, obviously, they were the worst team in football. Right. So you're – can Trevor Lawrence be the MVP of his team? Absolutely. But the entire league? I don't know. So I think Justin Fields is a high possibility there. I don't see a wide receiver winning it. However, I do see a lot of wide receivers really showing out. Who won Rookie of the Year this past year? Was it Jefferson?
I thought it was Justin Herbert. Did he win it?
It was Herbert. See? Justin Herbert. Yeah. But look at what his face did at the Vikings.
Yeah, no, Jefferson went off. He broke the rookie
records. But I'm saying he was breaking records left and right.
But Justin Herbert.
Even if he was balling out. But the thing is, he was balling out and still – Couldn't even get close to that conversation. So that's why I think quarterback is more on the smart money. And I think Justin Fields has a shot. Zach Wilson, I don't see it. I think he's going to do well. I think the Jets are going to flirt with 6 or 7 wins this year. I don't know if they can get to that.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet. But you're saying that the Jets...
6 wins. I mean, you remember, you got another game, too. So 6-11?
6-11.
6-11. I mean, that's doable. 7-10. 7-10. I'll give them 7-10. They could get to 7-10 because they did. They shored up that offensive line a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Drafting a couple safeties, cornerback, a couple of defensive players, another wide receiver, and Elijah Moore, who you think – reminds you of Tyreek Hill.
I think that's what we were saying
about Devontae Smith a couple of months ago about the wild card, and we got him in the second round. So, I think they're going to be
Jamar Chase, obviously, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, I think Kadarius Toney, Elijah Moore. I mean, there are some stud wide receivers out there who are going to ball out next year.
Yeah, but you know what? Jamar Chase, though, like, did they give him any kind of decent protection?
He's going to get killed again next year.
He got Jackson Carman, offensive tackle from Clemson. And other than that, they got a fourth rounder in Deontay Smith, offensive tackle.
They could have had Penei Sewell, Rashad Slater there.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless they get
overall rank is 78, grade is 75.
Unless they're gonna sign a left tackle from somewhere. And I don't know where.
Penei Sewell went to who again?
He went to Detroit.
Detroit, yeah, that's right.
They'll be protecting Jared Goff over there.
I think that Jared Goff's gonna do well in Detroit, but they got one wide receiver. I mean, they have questionable wide receivers, so maybe
their
offense is not going to be great. But Denver got a stud cornerback in Surtain.
Denver's interesting
Williams, running back. So they got Melvin Gordon over there. They got Lindsey's gone, right? Is Lindsey gone?
Yeah, I think
Philip Lindsey.
Yeah,
I think he left. And then they got this Javonte Williams coming in, offensive guard, outside linebacker, a couple of safeties, another wide receiver. Obviously, they got Jerry Jeudy and what's his face? I can't remember. The one that got injured last year. Cortland Sutton. Yeah. So they got some pieces over there. And who just went over there? What quarterback just went over there? Why am I drawing a blank right now?
To the Broncos?
Yeah. The Broncos just made a trade for a quarterback.
Let me see. I'm trying to look it up here.
Teddy Bridgewater. And they got Drew Locke. So, there was a meme the other day. Please pray for Jerry Jeudy. He's not hurt, but he just has Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater.
That's what Drew Locke's out there.
Yeah. Hey, you had a man crush on Drew Locke.
I did, man. I thought they were
10 months ago. 10 months ago, you had a.
I was lied to. I was told Drew Lock was going to be the man, and I was lied to. I was jilted. You know what? Screw you, Drew Lock. You're out. Gone. Bye. So he's gone. Yeah. Teddy Bridgewater is going to come in. They're going to draft. So here's what's going to happen, I think. And I think that this is how Denver's playing it. Peyton Manning went over there towards the end of the career. I think Denver is that type of organization that makes a play for a quarterback late in their career, like a Peyton Manning. And they will – if Aaron Rodgers goes anywhere, I think he ends up in Denver.
I mean, he could play there.
Yeah. And look, he's got
– he could play there.
He's got – and he's got a stud.
Oh, he's got stud wide receivers and running backs.
Throw rockets all over the field.
He would thrive. He would thrive absolutely. Over there. No doubt in my mind because, I mean, let's be real. Davante Adams is a great wide receiver. Aaron Jones is a great running back. But after that, Rodgers had nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Whoa, wait a minute. That team has all pros. That team is loaded. The Packers are loaded.
Dude, they had no legitimate number two wide receiver. He had to make Alan Lazard a star to actually get anywhere.
He had Devontae Williams, Aaron Jones. Who's his tight end over there?
Jamal Williams.
Jamal Williams is tight end over there?
No. Yeah, he was all right. Not
Randall Cobb's on. Randall Cobb's on.
Randall Cobb.
No, he went to Dallas. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yeah.
Who was the other receiver on there?
Lazard was the second.
Yeah, he's got an offensive line that keeps him standing.
All right.
I mean, dude, and in the game against Tampa, if it isn't for a blown assignment by a corner and not making a catch, I think, was it a drop pass or something?
I think that Aaron Rodgers made the team better than they should have been.
No. I'm not saying that Aaron Rodgers is great, but that team is stacked, man. That team is a Super Bowl-ready team. They'll probably be in the NFC Championship next year. You don't think?
With Jordan Love leading
I mean, who knows?
They have depth chart. So Davante Adams, then you got Equanimeous St. Brown.
Okay.
Of law firm Valdez Scantling, who's hit or miss. And you got Alan Lazard. Alan Lazard is listing as number two. And then you got Jay Sternberger.
Okay.
And the other, for some reason, the other wide receiver there is not. Oh, Robert Tonyan. Yes, okay. He did good. Did good.
I mean,
they got Rodgers and Love, and then Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have weapons over there.
But
man.
Dude, Alan Lazard was his number two. Like, think about Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton versus Davante Adams and Alan Lazard. I mean, come on.
Okay, but Mike, they were in the red zone the whole game, and they couldn't put it in the end zone.
Alan Lazard, 33 receptions for 451 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I don't know. I think
it was Tonyan, Adams, and Jones. That was it. Without that, they had nothing.
Okay.
Tonyan, 52 receptions, 586, 11 touchdowns.
I still think Aaron Rodgers has talent to go to a Super Bowl, and that team is loaded.
I think they still need a couple of pieces on.
They just drafted a wide receiver in the third round. Who are they taking in the third round? What was that kid's name?
Davante Adams is a beast. 115, yeah. 1374, and 18 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, this guy. Who they draft in the third round? I don't know. I'm not looking at it right now.
Yeah. Well, look, the point is, look, I just think that this thing is it's over.
Packers, Green Bay. Yeah, so they got a cornerback, a center. And Amari Rodgers from Clemson, wide receiver.
Yeah, there you go.
Third round, 22nd pick.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, man, I think this breakup is inevitable. It's going to happen. Question is, where is he going to go? Who has the draft capital and the means to trade from? That's it.
And if they're going to allow him to be traded.
I mean, he doesn't have no trade clause.
Well, if the guy wants,
but he could just sit out and just be like, "Look, I'm retired."
Yeah, he could just say, "All right, screw you, I'm out."
Yeah,
DK Metcalf is going to
try for the Olympics,
join the Olympics. He's going to try out for the Olympics.
Good for him, represent the country.
What is this? Sports stadiums asking fans for their vaccine passports. That's so
difficult. Yeah, eventually. I mean, it's going to happen eventually, man. It's going to happen eventually.
And yeah, I mean, I got mine. I got mine ready. And everyone who does not know, there is an app that you can upload your vaccine. No, in New York State there is. I'm sure there's something available in your area as well. So definitely take a look at it. I actually downloaded the app. I haven't done it yet. I need to actually get on the ball and do that. But I definitely want to go to a game.
Yep.
Sometime soon. And you're fully vaccinated tomorrow, huh?
No, tomorrow's the big day. Tomorrow hit that 2 week mark.
Yeah.
Where I am fully vaccinated. I can go live life until that I gotta get a booster shot or whatever it is. But I am
Well, 6 months.
I have to go in
5 months. You got to go in 6 months.
Whatever. And listen, I'm fully vaccinated. Life is all good.
And what was it we were talking about? We should. I can't remember what I was going to say.
I don't know.
I can't remember. Anyway. We'll
figure it out for next episode.
The over-the-counter medication they're coming out with or something? Trying to work on something?
Yeah. By the end of the year, Pfizer should have an over-the-counter medication that you might be able to take a pill now and take it. So listen, I mean, look. Science is incredible. I mean, what these people are coming up with is just it's incredible. But people forget too, they've been working on this stuff for 20 years. Started with the first COVID SARS in like 2000 over there. And they've been working on this for years. So, and then this has spawned other vaccines. I mean, they're talking about vaccines for HIV, vaccines for cancer. So hopefully some good will come out of all this.
Yeah. No, we're trending in the right direction. So there was something else that we needed to mention. I cannot remember what it was, or maybe we did mention it. I'm just
probably did.
Yeah. So, but quick, we're going to happy Cinco de Mayo tomorrow everybody. Have so enjoy, everybody. Drink responsibly.
Yes.
Because when we come back on Thursday, we're going to be talking about alcohol a lot more. We have a special guest, Justin Honeysuckle from Tended Bar. And we're excited to talk about what Tended Bar is and hear a lot more about it. And then next...
Right in the show.
I hope he has some like working prototype there. Yeah, that would be nice. I'll reach out to him and see if he's got something that he could show us live. And then next Tuesday, a Fan Experience TV first, everybody. We are going to be joining our good friend, Matt Wolf. He was one of our, guest three to four, something like that. So Ticket Time Machine, and he has his own show now. For those of you who do not know, it's called The Wolf Den. That is Wolf with two Fs. Go check him out because next Tuesday, a special crossover event.
Simulcast.
We will be joining him on The Wolf Den at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, May 11th, and then at 9 o'clock, you will see us right here, joined by Matt Wolf. So we are going to have a crossover event, two shows, one night, and same great fans. So until then, we will see you on Thursday 1st, and enjoy the rest of Star Wars night. Go check out the
May
new...
May the 4th
be with you. Go check out the new Star Wars content for all you Star Wars fans out there. A lot of stuff. Bad Batch is out on Disney Plus and amongst other things. I think I'm going to watch at least one of the movies or an episode of something just so I can get some kind of Star Wars stuff in today. I'm sure they did somewhere.
Okay. Yeah.
But also Disney probably has a hold on it because it's on Disney Plus and everything. Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. And enjoy the rest of the night. Enjoy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. And we will see you right back here Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Peace.